We got a real simple plan. One me and one mission.
Georgia has won the national championship. Touchdown!
You're a fan, you might think this is sports heaven. This might be college football heaven. Yeah.
This is ESPN's College Game Day Podcast. Now alongside Pete Thamel, here's Reese Davis.
Nick Saban gets a contract extension, which means he will coach Alabama for all eternity. What will college football look like by the end of the Saban contract, and why the platelets might be ready to shift sooner than you think? And the definitive top 25 preseason ballot, mine, will be revealed no matter what slings and arrows may come my way. This is the College Game Day Podcast for Wednesday, August 24th. I'm Reese Davis. We're going to be hosting this podcast under the College Game Day umbrella this year. Pete Thamel is going to join me, and I'm happy to be able to get to know you on a more personal level, Pete. So glad to be working with you this year.
Yeah, Reese, I'm fired up. Nothing gets me the juices flowing like week zero when you're combing through that New Mexico State roster looking for a little edge. And Hawaii Vanderbilt, it might as well be like the 85 Bears playing one of Tom Brady's Patriot teams. Like, I am let's let it rip, man. I'm excited that we're finally here. I'm excited that we're going to be actually talking about college football players more than grant of rights. I'm excited to take this journey with you, man. We've got a great team that we're going to be able to showcase here, and I'm fired up to get rolling.
Well, before you get too carried away by avoiding the grant of rights, we're going to touch on that a little bit in this podcast, not a lot, and then we're really going to shift toward games when we have a podcast later this week on Friday, when we will make picks against the number set by our comrades in arid regions. And there will be a competition. I think we'll outline this more fully, but I think we're going to compete for steak. Do you like steak?
I love steak. I am like a pure carnivore.
Me too.
As I've gotten older and fatter, I've realized the only way I can stay less fat is to unfortunately avoid many carbohydrates and just eat meat. So yeah, like, I like eat red meat 4 days a week, which may make my heart explode, but it tastes good.
It's not going to, it's good for you. So anyway, we'll delve into that over the course of the season. Maybe the longevity key for Nick Saban is maybe he eats a lot of red meat. I know that he eats the same thing every day for lunch so that he doesn't have to think about it. Do you realize, first of all, I know you remember this. Remember when people scoffed at the idea that Saban would be at Alabama long term? They laughed at Alabama hoping to return to glory. Now the dude is the seventh longest tenured head coach. He acts like he's pushing 50 instead of pushing 70. And I'm not sure of his red meat consumption habits, but I do know this. Unlike almost every, not every coach, but almost every coach I've ever met, the demands of the job chip away a little bit at them. Every season, every situation, every disappointment chips away and takes a little piece out of their being. Nick Saban needs that like the rest of us need oxygen. So whatever college football looks like by 2030 when his contract runs out, he'll still be throwing the straw hat and threatening to go watch the Pigeons do their business on the dock if he can't get them to do it right.
I have a great memory of the Saban hiring process, Reese. And I'd have to look it up, but it was like a 4 weeks that Alabama's job was open.
Yeah.
They fired Mike Shula and they had to wait Saban out. And it was just to think about that. So whatever, what year was that? 07, 08?
07. Yeah, 07. Well, 06. 06 was 06 when the pursuit was going. 07 was his first season. Yeah.
So I was driving in that Southern footprint before Paul Feinbaum had become an ESPN superstar. He was a very popular, wonderfully divisive local radio show host. And I might have been going from Gainesville to Auburn, but it was around the SEC championship in Atlanta. I was going to see whatever school was going to play that year. And I always say seemed important at the time, but I don't really remember. But I remember I had an hour of Feinbaum unfiltered on like day 14 of this search. And it was just this like little encapsulation into this meltdown of like what would happen if Nick Saban doesn't come. Can you imagine like the Ohio State job being open for 28 days right now, or can it, like in an active time of the cycle? Obviously, like USC fired Clay Helton and that job was open for months, but in an active open search at a job like Alabama, that job being essentially open for a month is mind blowing. Like just to think back as to how that, you know, as to how that unfolded. And I really think like, boy, was, I always say, don't judge the coaching search by the process, judge it by the hire. And I usually bring up the Nick Saban hire in that window.
Well, Mal Moore was the athletic director then, and his name graces the football building at Alabama now. He played there. He was an assistant under Bear Bryant for a number of years, an athletic director for a number of years. And during that search, I was talking to Mal from time to time. And I remember when he first, when we first discussed his decision to fire Mike Shula. And he said to me, and it shows you what I know. He said to me, he goes, well, I want Nick Saban. And I said, Nick, I was like, that would be fantastic, Mal. It would be an unbelievable hire. But I mean, he, I said, he left LSU largely because it seemed like he wanted to be just all ball. And he's only been there 2 years. I said, do you, I said, I don't know. And he said, I think I can get him. Now, in the meantime, he was rebuffed and had Rich Rodriguez hired. He, I mean, Rich or representatives for him. And there are a lot of different combinations and permutations on that story. But Rich had agreed to take the job. Mal thought he was going to take the job. And while I firmly believe two things, Pete, I believe had Rich Rodriguez accepted the Alabama job, he would have won a national championship at some point. I also believe that as we sit here by 2022, that he would not be the Alabama coach anymore. So those are two things. And certainly wouldn't be a dynasty like what Saban has established. But they thought that was going to happen. And I mean, life comes at you fast because as you pointed out last night, as we were texting back and forth, Rich Rod, who both of us are very fond of, has in fact made it to the state of Alabama, is now at Jacksonville State as a head coach of the Gamecocks and has an entire Spygate scandal going on there, doesn't he?
Can we play that clip, Taylor?
Pretty good source was true that they had a couple staff members at our spring game, which is kind of like that's not really supposed to happen. But we're making plans accordingly, you know, if they're over there thinking they have our plays or what have you, or signals or something like that. We've changed things since the spring. Then we caught somebody trying to film something the other day. And first my daughter caught him, Raquel saw him. And then we caught him again, saw him, you know, peering through there with his camera. And I sent the biggest guy in our program's crew, one of our assistant strength coaches. He's about like 6'7", 350, probably benches like 1,000 pounds or something. Sent him up to bleachers to run him out. And that guy disappeared pretty quick.
Richard, there are so many layers to go through on this story, and our buddy David Pollock, as he's going to do throughout the season, is joining us now. David, I hope you've heard about this Stephen F. Austin espionage that Rich Rodriguez believes he's being spied on at Jacksonville State. Now, look, we're week zero. This is mid-season stuff right here because Stephen F. Austin, they are the Lumberjacks, and they're not okay if they're sneaking around trying to spy. But let me tell you this. You will not get past the ever-watchful, discerning eye of the former Arizona Wildcat cheerleader, Raquel Rodriguez, when she when she picked up on that. I mean, this is Rich Rod's got an entire family, a family business going, watching out to make sure he's not spied on, Pollock. What do you think about coaching paranoia in midseason form in week zero?
This is amazing. This means college football is back, baby. I mean, that's the best way you can say it. I mean, all coaches are paranoid. Reese, are all coaches not paranoid as crap? Every coach you've ever been around.
They're near delusional.
It's amazing to hear them.
It's preposterous at times. And just because you're doing some high school coaching now, I'm hoping that this is not going to turn you into one of those paranoid guys.
not yet. No, not yet.
Nope. I think we need like the 007 music in the background here, Taylor, to, you know, I mean, just can you imagine being like the the Stephen F. Austin assistant who has to fly to Jacksonville State, which is in Alabama, not in actually Jacksonville, like the quality control guy who has to go and not wear any logos and sit in the stands at the spring game and tape all the plays. Like somebody had to do that. Like they had to get on a plane or drive a really long way. Like that's just amazing effort. And that is what makes this sport like wonderfully ludicrous.
So Jacksonville State, Stephen F. Austin, I've got an early quiz for you guys. Can you guys tell me a great CFL quarterback who also was a starting quarterback for a period of time in the National Football League who hails from Jacksonville State?
Pollock?
Oh, CFL, my mind always goes right to Doug Flutie, but I know he went Boston College.
Yes, Boston College and Jacksonville State are often confused.
Yes.
Oh. What era? Are we talking 80s, 90s?
Or well, college in the 70s, pros in the 80s. Some pros in the 70s too in the CFL.
Okay.
All right. That might be a little before my time. And it's definitely, if it's before my time, it's definitely before David's time.
Don't you too appreciate the history of the game? I thought you guys were into this. I thought you guys were the encyclopedic in your knowledge.
Jackson.
First of all, nobody claims to be an encyclopedia of knowledge. That's for sure. That's true. Warren Moon went to Washington, didn't
Washington,
he?
He did. I'll give you the answer. The answer is, and he was 2-time most outstanding player in the CFL, but never won a Grey Cup. Dieter Brock.
Yeah, I was on the tip of my tongue for sure.
But Dieter Brock was a great high school quarterback in the state of Alabama. And I think the idea, he started his career at Auburn. And I think the idea was that he was going to be the next great quarterback at Auburn. Didn't work out.
Pat Sullivan era?
Yeah, right after Pat. Right, it was right after Pat. I think Dieter's just a few years younger than Pat.
Is Auburn still looking for their quarterback since then, or what?
Hey, I think Dieter's still around. He might still have a little bit to spin the bean in there and spin some and go back if he's got a year of eligibility at Auburn. But anyway, I don't know why. I guess because I grew up in Alabama, and you know, those were my formative years when I was, you know, in kindergarten, sure, elementary school. I remember hearing about Dieter Brock, going to the high school all-star game in Bryant-Denny Stadium and watching Richard Todd play quarterback for the South squad against the North squad, who had a quarterback from my hometown who was playing for the North, who went to Auburn and also transferred to Jacksonville State, but was not Dieter Brock. Anyway, so that's your little bit of Jacksonville State history to go with your heaping plate of espionage for the day, too.
A little scoop of Muscle Shoals along the way.
Well, this was actually at that time I lived in a small town called Guin that subsequently was blown away by the killer tornadoes in 1974, rebuilt, and you know it was a great time. And that was one of the places where my love of football really started, because the first three football seasons I can remember, as I was 5 years old, the first season I remember was 1971. And the Marion County High School Red Raiders, undefeated state champions. The next year, one loss, but state champions again, lost to a much larger school. And the third year, again, undefeated state champions. So you sort of, and the whole town would shut down and go to the playoff games. They let us out of school or out of kindergarten at noon when we had to, you know, travel, you know, 5-6 hours to South Alabama to go to the games. So you sort of get it in your DNA at a pretty early age.
I'm loving this. Reese Davis, it's time to Bob Seger and turn the page, please, before everybody falls asleep.
Dude, you don't understand, man. All you young guys think, oh, it's just about today and my fancy social media. And let me tell you about my workout. You know, come on, man. A little history. Let the people get to know us. That's what we're going to do. That's what we're going to do here. Because now – you guys are going to take my top 25 and accept it as the gospel that it is.
The gospel. Indoctrinated into the gospel.
So it's good news. I'll tell you that.
It's good news because football's back. So what you got? Where are we starting here?
Well, Pete wanted to pick it apart, I think. I don't really know why.
Step up, because Pete. Let's go.
Once you get past the top three,
Yeah, it's a mess.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, you might as well. I always tell Ralph Russo from the Associated Press, can we have a section of teams that instead of putting them in a row so that they go up and down, they're stacked on top of each other, that they're all like in a column and spread across because they're all kind of the same. You know,
what would your where would your column stop from four down?
I'd have to look at the list, but I would say probably 15 or 16 somewhere in there, you know, with the opportunity for some of the other teams to, you know, to pop up and get in there in that next tier of teams, but probably somewhere in that range.
Where can we find your attempt at a ballot, Reese?
You know, I don't think I put it out there. You know, that site that if you vote in the AP poll, there's a site called, now I don't like to give credit to other sites because, you know, we want everybody to come to ESPN.com for everything. Now, Pollock, now you're right. Now we're boring people while we look at this, but we'll count on producer Taylor to cut all this garbage out.
Well, right? Reese, we could also just have Pete check his email because it was in the email that was sent out that had Reese's top 25. So
did
you could
really?
Do that if you'd like, Pete.
Hey, Pete, there's a newfangled thing called email that our producer sends out.
Here we are. Here we are. Really, we get a lot of emails. I'm new to ESPN. One of the things that everyone asks me, what's it like to work at ESPN? So you get a lot of email.
How about this? I don't use the company email. Actually, they took it away from me for non-activity. So I was trying to conduct some business. And in order to verify my employment this week, this ridiculous company, despite the fact that I sent them one of the professional things that is offered through Disney HR to show that I'm gainfully employed and all of that kind of thing, they wouldn't accept it. You know what they wanted? An official company email address. I'm like, well, it's going to bounce back to you. But anyway, I mean, I don't. So yeah,
let me do a word of the wise, Pete.
The ESPN email can be overwhelming with hot list and this and that. There are a lot of things. A lot of things.
Yes.
Before we move on, we've got a couple of things going on at ESPN podcast that we want to mention. First, 30 for 30 podcast presents The Longest Game. In the spring of 1981, the Pawtucket Red Sox and the Rochester Red Wings met for a minor league game. Over the course of 33 innings, the two teams would make history. This episode features archival sound, an accidental treasure trove of the game's play-by-play broadcast, and interviews with those who experienced it firsthand. Listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. And ESPN, in partnership with Peyton Manning's Omaha Productions, present Always College Football with ESPN college football analyst Greg McElroy, taking a deep dive into the sport with the biggest names on and off the field. With off seasons being a thing of the past, McElroy goes year-round with analysis, opinions, and insight on top teams and under-the-radar stories from coast to coast. That's Always College Football. Listen wherever you get your podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right. Well, yeah, I have your attempt at a ballot here.
It's the definitive ballot.
It probably yes. Clearly this will hold all season.
Do you want to know the philosophy and ranking first?
Though? Yeah. No. And I actually listened to you on Ralph's podcast while going for a run the other day, and it was interesting. What I appreciated most about your poll was your willingness to be flexible. I feel like the weakness of polls generally is that something is established and then we have actual empirical evidence, not just like thoughts and projections. And then people are hesitant to make seismic change. And you seem to indicate an openness to that, which I very much appreciated.
Well, that's the whole deal, because this is fun. I love the preseason polls because of what we're talking about in terms of getting fired up and, you know, people mad that you have this team there and another team someplace else. It sets the stage. But when you're ranking these teams, the exercise is not trying to validate your prediction. The exercise is to reflect what you see. And a preseason poll is a mix of what you've seen, what you anticipate, and a little bit of gut feel. That's all. But like, look, if, you know, I've got Clemson 4. If they can't throw the ball again this year, then they're gonna drop like a stone and fast, you know? But if they can, if their defense dominates, then that's something else. So, you know, but I do think that that's the whole key is early, especially now in November, you know, late October, November, somebody has a sandwich game. They don't look great. Cut them some slack, man. It's a long season and, you know, it's an emotional game, but early on, you got to move them around.
Well, and I think what I like about Utah is, and I think people are talking about Utah is Utah always finishes strong, but they start weak and they got a game against Florida out the gates where they got to travel and it's going to be, you know, a tough opponent. I'm looking forward to seeing Utah to see if they can kind of cure some of those front of the season ails that they tend to have. Michigan at 6 is a lot higher than I would have them. I felt like last year was a great season. I love what they did. A lot coming back, but again, you know, I feel like Michigan is, they were very much riding on the defense, a great defense, an all-time defensive end duo that to me were, I don't think they're going to be able to replicate. I just don't think they're going to. Ohio State, you sacked the guy 35 times and pressured him 6,000 times. Like, I don't think, you know, you got a first-round pick at safety. I don't think their defense will be as good. Third coordinator in 3 years. So I think Michigan, I would immediately have lower. I like Utah up top. A&M is so interesting to me. Reese has A&M at 8 because, I mean, you either feel – A&M to me, it feels like everybody's like, sleeper, the team's going to be really good, or this team sucks. Like, I feel like it's and I keep hearing, well, Jimbo's had talent. Jimbo's not a good coach. He's not maximizing his talent. Jimbo hasn't had talent like he has now. There's a difference when you stack two top three classes on top of each other. And last year, the number one class in the country, every coach in America will tell you that's kind of hard to screw up. It really is. It's kind of hard to screw up that great of talent. Look at Kirby. Look at Nick. Look at Dabo consistently. They're great coaches. Don't get me wrong. But again, it ain't like they're missing with their talent year after year after year. So I look for A&M to be a team that, they don't need to be at 8 anymore. You know, you're going to do recruiting this well from now on, Reese. They need to be a team that is in the mix before the season and in the mix at the end of the season because your talent level says that, you know, like that. That's going to be something in the future that I'll be looking forward to.
I need to see some quarterback play there.
Amen.
Max Johnson's going to be the guy. I can tell you that. What I saw from Max at LSU, I like enough to say that he's going to be the guy and it's going to be way better than it was in previous years. That I can guarantee.
Is he leading the competition? I've kind of gotten a vibe that Haynes King is kind of moved out there.
And first of all, I don't talk to anybody. You know that. I don't have friends. So I'm not talking to anybody at A&M.
You have me, David.
But from what I've seen from Haynes King, and listen, it was a small sample size a year ago. Max Johnson can do some elite things when it comes to processing. Max Johnson can do a lot of Jimbo Fisher type things that he wants him to do to go through progressions. Max Johnson will stare down the barrel and get smacked in the face and deliver a strike. And I think he's got enough mobility to make plays. I've seen more from Max, so I trust Max a lot more. And that's why if I was having to pick one guy that I think I would roll with Max.
So, to pull it back 30,000 feet, the two most interesting teams that I think to rank this year and that I was curious where they'd get ranked are the teams that ended up unranked last year, which are A&M and USC. Now, you showed some judiciousness by putting USC at 14, which I completely agree with, Reese. I know my job was to tear your ballot apart, but I need to see some kind of heartbeat from that USC defense. I need some kind of sign, some kind of just defensive front presence. I mean, Chip scored 62 on them last year at the end of the regular season. Oregon State, off the top of my head, was in the 50s in the Coliseum. Nolan was running up and down the field. Like, so to me, and I know Lincoln is a genius, and I am a huge Caleb Williams fan. I think he'll be the number one pick in the 24 draft. I think there's a lot of, you know, what they've upgraded offensively and skill-wise is great, but their offensive and defensive lines, you can't quick fix those spots. Portal, if there's a great defensive lineman in the portal, for the most part, like, there's problems. Like, there's those positions, you can't, I would say you can't microwave your lines, especially mm-hmm. your offensive line. And so I am still going to hesitate. Like, I just can't get out of my mind how Stanford ragdolled them last year. So you're going to tell me they're going to go to Stanford?
Yeah,
you're going to go to Stanford this year and win by 21? Like, I need to see it a little bit before I jump on the bandwagon. And the same thing with A&M. Obviously, the injury at the quarterback position, you know, sidestep that season. But I still have a feeling, and I agree with David on stacking classes. Like, people ask me what, you know, how will Marcus Freeman do at Notre Dame? Well, if he has three straight top five classes, Marcus Freeman's going to do just fine. Like, mm-hmm. if you have elite talent and you have a quarterback, which Notre Dame I don't think has right now, but will. But if you have elite talent and a quarterback, you're going to win football games. It's just, it's like basic college football physics, right? And so, but I do think, like, if A&M, which has a brutal schedule, as you're always going to have in the West, I just have a hard time seeing them waking up and going 10-2 or 11-1 right now. So,
as it pertains to USC, and I want to be very clear about how I say this, I too believe that Lincoln Riley is an exceptional offensive coach. I do believe that he will be successful at USC. But he stepped into a situation where the culture was built at Oklahoma. Now, did he put his mark on it in some areas? Of course he did. But the culture was built. Bob Stoops built that culture, and it was fine when he stepped in there. He's now taking a conglomeration and trying to fit in transfer portal pieces and a program that hasn't been tough on the lines of scrimmage, as you alluded to, and they lost 6 of 7 and only one of them was a one possession game, and people are leaving and coming and going. And, you know, I know he can drive the Lamborghini. I want to see if he can build one. I suspect he can, but that's why I'm not on the bandwagon of them, you know, as a playoff contender, top five team, all that kind of thing. But on sheer talent, on Williams to Jordan Addison, assuming they can get along and everybody's happy, will they knock off somebody they're not supposed to? Yeah, probably. But they also might get clipped by someone they're not supposed to, because even as good as things were going at Oklahoma, they had the occasional Kansas State, Iowa State problem, and not to cast aspersions at two solid programs, but they probably didn't have any business, giving the Sooners the level of problems they did over the last few years.
Yeah, and I agree with both of y'all. Now, listen, I think I definitely agree with you too, Reese, because he definitely found the parts to the Lamborghini really quickly without having. Well, he had to pay for some of it, I'm sure.
Trojan collective did that? Which warring faction of Trojan collectives did that?
The United Airlines, Jordan Addison's flying your way. I think that here's what I saw from Lincoln Riley teams. And again, I'm not being critical. I'm being honest. What I saw was lines of scrimmage that I never feared. I saw skill that I feared. I saw quarterback play that I feared. I saw a system that was really, really good. The further I got away from Coach Stoops, the less nasty I saw, the less toughness I saw with that offensive line. And it continued to get worse to the point last year where they couldn't run the football. They weren't very good, period. So they weren't good compared to their standards. So I do think it'll take take some time. And I do think that the lines of scrimmage for USC has been pretty bad for a while now. And I don't think that's a gear that's going to just flip. So I'm going to wait and see at USC. They're going to have a ton of talent. They're going to outscore a lot of people, but I don't think they're going undefeated. I think they'll lose several games, and I don't think they're going to be in the playoff mix.
Think about this, guys. They're going to have 16, 17 new starters at the University of Southern California. And we're in a completely college football has changed so much in the last 3 years. And I really think USC to me is the prototype of this new era where you have imported stars, you have a microwave team. And I think to me, it's a fascinating test of, okay, you can bring in these great players, but like David said, the culture of nastiness and toughness and like having to go on the road and win a game in the fourth quarter, that just importing talent doesn't mean that's automatically going to happen. That was clearly lacking at Clay Helton's USC. So to me, they're the test case of the new era, and it's really compelling.
The new era too has we've seen David's, you know, has opposed Dabo Swinney's idea of the transfer portal from the beginning, saying that you have to have it, but you have to have it judiciously because in almost all cases, there are always exceptions. You don't want to speak in absolutes. But in almost all cases, someone who is transferring to the next place is doing so for personal gain. And I'm fine with that. That's perfectly okay. You've got a very short window as a college athlete to pursue your career. That's okay. The problem comes is if you have too many divided interest on a team. This is not bringing in Jameson Williams because you need one guy who can take the top off in your receiving core. That's a little different than bringing in a lot of guys, all of whom are saying, I need to make this move for me to enhance my draft stock, to get more touches, to do this, to do that. Maybe in some cases even have better NIL opportunities, whatever it is. It's different when you bring in something to sprinkle in and fill a need as opposed to building your program. That's not to say you can't do it. You can, but I think it takes a specific type of ability, a specific art of blending personalities. It's almost like Phil Jackson. Phil Jackson's one of the greatest coaches in any sport, and Phil Jackson was great at coaching stars, right? Now, I know that organization largely, at least of Jordan, you know, Pippen sort of built the framework for years, but he was great at coaching stars. I've always contended that I don't think that he would have been so great at doing what Lenny Wilkins could do for 100 years in the NBA and pull five guys out of the Y and a couple of pro-level players and win 50 games over the course of an 82-game season. So there are different skill sets to being able to coach a group of stars or perceived stars. And for the most part, the people that are transferring in using the portal view themselves as needing the opportunity to be a star. And are you going to be able to deliver that? And if you can't, can that person then sort of lessen his own goals or subjugate his own goals for the good of the greater program? And that's an art to be able to get someone to buy into that.
I agree. So let's go back to ripping your poll, the initial intention.
We've gotten too philosophical here.
Yes,
for you, Pete.
Yes, exactly. This is like Zen and the art of voting with Reese. So here's my quibble for you, Reese. You have two group of five programs, or only group of five programs for like five more months in your poll. So like you said on our initial podcast, this will be a validation of why you hate different schools. So why do you hate the little guy, Reese? Why are you ignoring Fresno? Why are you ignoring Utah State? What about Air Force, Boise, UCLA? Like, why
BYU.
Are you? Yeah, BYU. Do you not have BYU on here?
I don't.
Oh my God! What a glaring oversight. I think
they
BYU
were, like
is the
I told,
most
like I told
criminally all the BYU, underrated team.
Like I told all the BYU fans, they were 26 or maybe 27, maybe 28. Who knows?
So I'm going to make a bold declaration here. Jaren Hall will be a top 15 NFL draft pick come April.
You think he's better than Zach Wilson?
I will reserve that. I will say this: Zach Wilson everybody forgets, did it against that COVID schedule where it was a bunch of defensive backs who looked like me and Reese out there on the perimeter. I mean, he torched a bunch of really bad pro. Yeah, no. We are not. But if you look back at that BYU COVID schedule, Coastal was their best opponent. They didn't play anyone because everyone went all conference and it really squeezed independent. So like their second hardest game was UTSA. It was a lot of Troys and some one double. Like it just was not a good schedule. Zach Wilson had the most perfectly timed exit. So could he be better? Yes. Is he now? No. Am I excited to see it? Yes. They have Oregon early. They have Baylor early. And yes,
they have Utah State and Notre Dame early. Now, I think they're good, and I'm not trying to predict outcomes here. But if you look at the top of their schedule, down through October 8th in Notre Dame, 4-2 would be really, really good. 5-1 would be exceptional. I can't imagine. And then Arkansas after that, if you want to take it another week. So,
I'm with Reese.
I try not to predict how the outcome will be, but that I'll admit that was a little bit of it. I'm not convinced they're going to be much above 500 until mid-October, and that might not be fair because they're actually going to be a pretty good team, but they'll be looking for signature wins. I do like they've got a lot of experience back, and I like Hall as well. And To be clear, I wasn't challenging the notion that he was good or could be a high draft choice. I think he's a terrific player. I was just wondering what you thought in relation to their most recent quarterback.
Yeah, no, and it's I think he's going to be one of the real fun guys to watch throughout the year. And one of the great things about BYU, why I love watching them, is that they always challenge themselves, which is why the COVID season stood out, because they didn't play anybody. I mean, they were supposed to play like five Pac-12.
Yeah, they tried. That wasn't their fault.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, it clearly wasn't. I'm not blaming them at all. I'm complimenting Wilson for like not sticking around to play teams that could have devalued his draft stock eventually. Yeah, It was the perfect escape. It was like the football version of an Irish exit.
I called their first game that year against Navy in a completely empty stadium, which was totally bizarre.
A lot of good tackling in that game, Reese.
It was tackling optional in that game. But I remember going through that schedule, and I mean they had a record number of Power Five opponents across. It was their most ambitious schedule ever. That was undone that year. But I like that too. I'm excited to see them in the Big 12 when that comes to fruition, because I agree with you. They've always done a great job of going out and trying to get people to play them.
Their schedule may be easier in some ways in the Big 12.
It may be.
Like they're not going to have Notre Dame, Oregon. It's a great program, and they're always going to be great up front, right? Because they have like bigger, older guys who, they're sort of equipped and built to control the line of scrimmage. But the one nuance that they have now that maybe in past years they've lacked is some skill. They have real skill there. And I think they could become a big buzz team in September. So I would have ranked them, Reese.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Speaking of Notre Dame, what are we thinking about Notre Dame at 7?
It's just the ESPN guy trying to hype up the game day game.
See, if Pete doesn't know me very well yet, I'm going to be completely candid. I don't feel good about that. I'm not going to lie. I don't feel good about how highly I have them ranked. But if you start looking around, I've got questions about everybody else around them. I want to believe in North Carolina State. Baylor's replacing a lot. Oklahoma State is replacing its defense. We've already beaten the USC thing to death. So I kind of was. I'm worried about A&M's quarterback, and then they also have some other areas of inexperience, albeit replacing replacing them with talented guys. I think Notre Dame's going to be good. And of that group, I just sort of stack them on top. You know, I'm not sold that they're a slam dunk, surefire top 10 team. I'm not.
No,
not
and if you do this exercise, if you do this exercise at home, you'll see how hard it is. I mean, this is
it's great next point.
Impossible to actually do if you go, because then you're going, okay, well, I got Michigan at six. Well, okay, where are they better? Are they better? I don't know. I think it's a hard deal. I think I trust Marcus Freeman. I think Marcus Freeman, the future is bright, but this year, I mean, I just think this is going to be a lot. And you've seen a lot of young coaches come in and have success. Don't get me wrong, but you're talking about a young guy with very little experience. If you didn't keep Tommy Rees, I'd be like, dude, I mean, there's no shot. Like, I would feel even worse about it, but keeping Tommy Rees and having the players on board, I think is a great thing. I just think, just like all of us, when you're young in your profession to a certain job, I think it's tough. It's tough to learn it. And especially at that job, that's a national brand that requires a lot of you. He's killing recruiting and he's doing a great job. But I think this year, I don't think they'll finish that high. I don't think they'll finish, you know, seven. I don't think they'll finish top 10, but I think they'll be a competitive team. But offensively, a lot of question marks. Obviously, the quarterback spot would be number one. You already have an injury at the slot. You got the best tight end in the country. Tailback, who's the guy? I think there's a lot of question marks about this team this year, and I think they'll finish top 15, top 20, but they won't finish top 10.
You know, I think the demeanor that you bring up with Marcus Freeman is interesting. Walk down memory lane again. I mean, think of the head coaches with no experience that job has chewed up. Jerry Faust a long time ago, Bob Davey now, and Charlie
was Watts. Brock, what's his name? Jerry Faust's quarterback? Are we going to
hear your CFL? No, Dieter Brock All-Star? Was not.
Dieter Brock, sorry.
What's his name?
Dieter Brock. Had you ever heard of Dieter Brock?
Winnipeg Blue Bombers, man.
No, okay. Neither had I. All right. Well,
you guys should have spent more of your summers watching replays of CFL games on the old ESPN. Anyway, but I think Marcus's demeanor is not that those guys, I think Marcus has an aura about him that there is humility there, but there is also confidence.
Oh yeah.
And I think he is well suited to Notre Dame. I've talked to people around that program. He listens to people. He asks the right questions. He's strong when he needs to be. His demeanor and his approach to this job, for a guy who'd only been there at Notre Dame's a different kind of place. And for a guy who'd only been there for a year, he has quickly, very quickly understood what it's about and done a great job up to this point.
Brian Kelly is a heck of a football coach. You can like him, not like him. You can not like his Southern accent. You can not like a lot of things about his personality. The dude knows how to coach ball. I mean, and listen, I think the first thing I always hear, y'all always hear, I'm sure, is Notre Dame's overrated every year. They do this every year. I mean, the last 2 years, Notre Dame's been, I think, 9 going in. They finished 8. They were 10 going in the year before. They finished 4. They've been right there in the playoff mix the past couple seasons. So, I mean, they've actually been underrated for preseason polls the last couple years, which is against the narrative of people that, overrated. Notre Dame they're up there too high every year. I mean, come on, dude. They've been pretty good.
Yeah. In the interest of ESPN promotion, I'll have a feature next week on Marcus Freeman that's going to run on a bunch of our platforms or run on our first game day. So I got to spend a couple days in South Bend. Are you going to make fun of me, Reese?
No, I'm just going to remind you that it's most important that it runs on game day, preferably first.
Okay. I don't have a lot of say in that. I'm just making my widgets in the basement here. just trying to break like wide receiver coach news. The Marcus Freeman, so it was an interesting dynamic to be around that program, be in that building for a couple of days and just sort of see how it operates. And I feel like there's a comfort in the identity of Notre Dame being very similar. I would say the two best players on that roster are the two tackles. And they're very young. Fisher's an Alt. Joe Alt's kid, who is the Kansas City Chiefs longtime tackle. And the identity of Brian Kelly's recent success at Notre Dame has been anomalous to the identity of most of the playoff games. It has been non-quarterback driven. It has been offensive line driven, and it has been line of scrimmage control game. You look at Brian Kelly's success, it's pretty anomalous and amazing that it has come with DeShone Kizer as probably the best prospect as a quarterback. Now, Ian Book was a really good player, right? He's the all-time, I believe, winningest quarterback in school history. But the lack of to have that level of success with the lack of dynamism at that position, I think is pretty interesting. And I think we're going to see the same thing this year. They have no tangible skill on the outside at the receiver position. It's just that is a vacant area of that program, and that is going to be a struggle. And I don't quite frankly know if they have a quarterback who could exploit it if they had it at a really high level like some of these other programs. They have good quarterbacks. They have quarterbacks who need to grow and learn and have a chance, but they are really, if they're going to win that game in Columbus and they're going to have another 10-win season, they are going to win by lining up and grinding over people. They have a very good defense. I think Al Golden was the best coordinator hire of the offseason. I think, I mean, you remember what he did at Temple, Reese. That was the single best rehabilitation job of a down. Temple was so bad, they got kicked out of the Big East. It's hard to get kicked out of a conference. I don't remember anyone getting kicked out of a conference all my years doing this. So like
it was near Snyder-esque, not quite to that level, but at least in the realm.
They are right there in that. So I think Al Golden being back in college and really being able to have his hands on that defense and giving Marcus the autonomy to run the program, to manage games, and to recruit, which he has said, I'm going to be the lead recruiter on all our recruits. So anyway, it's an interesting vibe and dynamic there. And you do this long enough, there's buzzwords every year. One of the big buzzwords right now is connection, right? Like, how do you connect to your teams? How do you connect to your staff? How do you connect to community, fans, players? And that is Marcus Freeman's gift in a lot of ways. 100%. He is a connector and on an elite, elite level. And he can connect with people in our space. He can connect with recruits, obviously. The players, I mean, you can't fake that video that went viral when they announced him as the coach, when the strength coach announced him as the coach. Like that, I mean, I get chills thinking about it. So there's a really interesting, cool vibe there. Now, look, could they go lose by 21 in the horseshoe? Absolutely. Like that's on the table. There's no doubt about it. But you can't argue that other than the Oklahoma State game, everything has gone right so far for Marcus Freeman.
And he also connected to the past. He spent a good deal of time with Lou Holtz, which was greatly appreciated by my former partner for sure. And he has given him his support as well. Because I promised a few of these things off the top, and we always deliver on our promises on this podcast. I was talking with a high-ranking official in college sports and college football. And one of the issues, and because we've talked about BYU and Notre Dame just came up, what's their conference future, all of that type of thing. More realignment is coming. And the thing that many of the people in charge are weighing is, do you do it now while things are topsy-turvy and already shaken, or do you let it settle down and then have yet another seismic shift? Pete, does this happen in the next 6 months, 12 months, or 5 years, that the next round of getting, as Kevin Warren said to Bryant Gumbel and others have alluded to, that maybe SEC, Big Ten are like in the neighborhood of 20 teams each?
Reese, I think it's a fascinating question. And I spend more of my time than I would ever care to admit talking about this with different people from across the country. Think about realignment. It affects everybody in some way or another, right? I don't think the only way that there is another wave of realignment soon is one of two things. One is somehow that Washington, Oregon, West Coast wing, which the Big Ten clearly covets, creates more value. There is not a lot of interest from the television standpoint, which means there's not monetarily. And then there's not a lot of, which means Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State would have to take a pay cut. Yeah. So I really feel like those schools, and quite frankly, USC doesn't want to take a pay cut. So there is an interest at the highest level of the Big Ten to build out that Western wing. Because there's a convenience factor, there's a world domination factor, there's an inevitability, as you spoke of, Reese, that it is going to happen. So it's like the old Jeremy Foley, if not eventually, why not now, right? Like that notion. That said, there is not enough, my understanding from talking to a lot of people about this, is that there's not enough TV value right now for that to happen. And the Ohio States, Penn States, Michigan's, and this is another dynamic there too that I think hasn't been talked about enough, Reese. USC doesn't want more West Coast neighbors than UCLA.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to, they basically own a really unique niche west of Texas. And if you talk to people at USC, there is a distinct sense there that the exclusivity of owning Los Angeles and being on the other side of the moat only with UCLA there means a lot to them. You bring Oregon and Washington in the league, you're inviting them into your recruiting backyard.
Mm-hmm.
Stanford, Cal, everybody else. So I think one of the reasons that USC went to the Big Ten was as a separator. So why eliminate the separator 3 months later? So the appetite on the ground does not equal the appetite in the commissioner's office.
And then, Pollock, we're going to have an expanded playoff at some point. And when we do, then the question of bowl games comes up. And someone posited an idea to me that I at first didn't like. And the more I thought of it, I thought, well, maybe we can do this. Because, first of all, there aren't too many bowl games. What's wrong with more football? The Weed Eater Bowl has never impacted the national championship race. They've been exhibitions since the beginning of time. Treat them as such. Let your freshmen play. Let anybody who's redshirted play. Do whatever you want to do with the bowl games. Treat them as an exhibition. We can have as many as we want. They're great television inventory. People like them. People watch them. That said, you want to attach a little more significance to week zero. How about playing some bowl games there? Now, I know we're trying to get away from these neutral site games, but maybe as a week zero type thing that you add a few more big brands in a bowl game. Pollock, would you be down for that?
It's the best idea I've heard when it comes to trying to make bowl games relevant. Because again, what do we need to make bowl games relevant? We need a product on the field and we need people to give a crap. Like, guess what happens when you're week zero? Everybody thinks they're really good. Everybody thinks they got a chance to win a national title. Everybody's going to play. Like, all the star players will play. All the teams will be engaged. It's a new season. So I think that it would be really good. But it's funny you say that about bowl games, because we know this. We see the numbers. So many people watch these freaking games. And by the way, guilty, because I ain't got anything else to do.
I watch them all, man.
And just, it's just like with, I get a kick out of people that, you know, if they pay these players, I'm not going to watch. Really? What else do you have to do?
Yeah.
Do you remember the FCS game from Montgomery that was on ESPN during the COVID year? It was two FCS teams. I watched that game like it was the Super Bowl.
I think if it's more games, we're going to watch it. That's the best solution that I've heard. Expansion is coming. It's just a matter of time. I'm with it. I'm for it. Like, I think expansion to four has, I don't think it's hurt our game at all. I think it's helped our game. So I think it's interesting how big the only thing I'm really curious about is how big the conferences get and how many do we settle on? Is it two and they're ginormous? Because, you know, Pete talks about that moat between the SEC and the Big Ten, which, please stop using the word moat on television. There's my first advice for you. You know, the chasm, or, you know,
how about anomalous? He double used anomalous earlier.
Yeah. I mean, either way, that would be great for not to hear that ever.
What's wrong with moat?
Who uses moat in their everyday vernacular, bro?
Talks about a moat vernacular, Pete. Just to show you that Georgia educates too, Pete.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a moat.
He wants chasm. Who uses chasm in their everyday language?
But anyway,
chasm or chasm?
It's hard C sound there.
Chasm.
So I think it'll expand. I think that'll be great. I'm not opposed to that by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm interested to see where we land, whether it's two, you know, super duper ooper conferences, or it's, you know, three, you know, pretty big conferences. But I guess we'll figure that out soon when Pete gets out of his basement.
Well, and so with that, gentlemen, we can, in future podcasts, turn our attention almost exclusively to games. And as it pertains to watching the games, you don't think I'm going to be watching Mustard and Brown against Big Bert Bielema? And I've said Bert on purpose, because that's like an inside joke for a number of years, because of he spells Brett with one T. It looks a lot like Bert, so we affectionately refer to him on the game day set as Bert. So I'll be watching Bert against Brown and Mustard. Charlotte and FAU. FAU quarterback, real quick. Who's the FAU quarterback?
Oh, I should know this. Oh, man.
It's one of those you could play a game. Is he still playing or is he not?
Is it one of Willie Taggart's FSU guys?
Chase. That,
huh?
Is it Chase?
No, that's Appalachian State.
Oh.
But he's another. Nicosi Perry, I believe.
Yeah, it is Nicosi Perry.
Yeah, wow. He had a big game against Charlotte last year, so you'll see him again.
He can scoop.
Yeah. Hey, this has been fun, guys. We're going to do this all season. It's going to be great.
Peace.
Enjoy the games.
Thanks for listening to our College Game Day podcast. We'll be back with a new, fresh, pick-filled episode on Friday. Talk to you then.